Nike is making those cool self-lacing shoes from Back to the Future a reality. The company says its newly unveiled Nike Adapt BB is a smart shoe that works with an app to create a customized fit for its wearer. So it's a shoe with a motor and a brain, or rather, a digital platform.
Here at the 2019 Detroit Auto Show, we've got lots of flashy cars and trucks being unveiled as usual. What's also notable is what's not here and who's not here. In the distance, in the corner and on the side, that's where BMW and Audi used to be. And over here, where Volkswagen is this year, this used to be where Daimler-Benz is. Those three German automakers decided not to come to Detroit this year.
More than 30,000 teachers in Los Angeles walked off the job Monday, leaving the second largest school district in America in limbo. The United Teachers of Los Angeles Union demanding higher pay, more staffing, and smaller class sizes. More than 600,000 students at some 900 campuses of the Los Angeles School District were met with picket signs. The teachers' union and the school district having failed to reach an 11th-hour deal over the weekend.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's January 18th, 5:10 in the morning. Thanks for joining us again for another edition of The Opening Bell. We're here on another business day. Thankfully, it is Friday, TGIF. Lots going on today. Paul Nolte is here on the program from King's View Asset Management in Chicago. We're going to be talking to Paul about the economy and our portfolios. A little bit later, Brian Summers from Skift, one of our other Friday regulars, is in. The aviation business editor over at Skift will be talking about some new stuff that United is working on and some revenue sources it's finding in more premium seats, selling more premium seats. So Brian will be along at about 5:40 this morning. Of course, we'll keep you posted on the latest news, sports, and, of course, the big weather story, the winter storm approaching Chicago throughout this hour. So stay with us. Let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk with futures pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up 93 points, about a third. The S&P futures up nearly a quarter of a percent. NASDAQ futures up nearly a quarter percent as well. In Europe, markets are generally in the green. FTSE in London, the DAX in Germany, the CAC in France, all up more than a percent. And in Asia, markets are generally higher as well, with the Nikkei up nearly a percent, a third. The Hang Seng up nearly a percent and a quarter. The Shanghai up nearly a percent and a half. And oil is trading at $52.77 a barrel, which is up about 70 cents. A couple of stories that we're watching for you this morning. Tesla, the carmaker Tesla, says it is going to cut its job force by around 7%. Elon Musk making that announcement, 7% of its full-time workforce. This is an update on the company's blog that has appeared this morning to all employees. The CEO, Elon Musk, speaking of a difficult road ahead, and said the company was targeting a small profit for the upcoming quarter. He says Tesla faces a tough challenge of making our cars, batteries, and solar products cost competitive with fossil fuels. Tesla is off nearly 8%, shares off nearly 8% in the pre-market this morning. Netflix is reporting a huge leap in subscribers. The streaming giant says it added nearly 9 million new subscribers in the last 3 months of 2018. That's the biggest jump ever for the company. Netflix now has 140 million subscribers worldwide. And younger American workers are taking home bigger paychecks, according to numbers released by the Labor Department yesterday. It says that workers between 16 and 24 years old are earning, on average, $549 per week for the year. That's about 59% of what older Americans are making, but it is still the smallest gap since 2012 in this area. Salaries for younger workers may be rising because of the tightening job market, which forces employers to offer more money to attract even low-skill workers. Let's begin with Paul Nolte this morning from King's View Asset Management. Paul's SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager over at King's View. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you.
Why don't we begin talking about the government shutdown, since it's probably a lot on a lot of people's minds. I heard something this week from the White House Council of Economic Advisors. Said this is costing, will cost the economy a tenth of a percent on GDP every week that it goes on. That might be a little high. And I think we will see an impact to GDP, and it won't show up until we get to the second quarter when they report on first quarter GDP. So we're not going to find out the impact until probably May of this year as to what that impact is going to be. Right now, the fourth quarter estimates, which are coming out here soon, GDP is running at about 2.5%, and there seems to be some good consensus around that. Coming into the first quarter, they're looking at probably about 2% GDP. So certainly, it has been stepped down from what we saw first half of last year coming off the tax cuts, et cetera. Tariffs play into that, as well as the government shutdown playing into that. Both of them are creating a drag on the economy. We're hearing more about the tariffs, certainly, from a lot of the earnings announcements that we're getting this week.
The folks who are not out spending money in the economy because they're not getting paid, that's a significant thing that really can't keep going on for much longer, can it?
No, it can't. It's going to hit. It will have an impact. But remember, too, that this is not a permanent impact, so that the employees, when the government finally comes to an agreement and gets funded, they will get back pay. They will go back out and spend. Where the impact is catching most is on a lot of contractors, and that business they won't recover from. You know, it's just however long they're not working. So a lot of the contractors for the government that are doing different jobs for the government, that won't recover. But the income for a lot of the government employees, they will get back pay, etc. So they will be made whole. It's just a matter of when. Mm-hmm. And the way things look right now, it could be a little while yet.
Yeah, and we're going to talk to Brian Summers a little bit later in the program, ask him about United and Delta this week, talking about the seats that are not being filled on their planes because of government workers not flying because they're off.
Yeah, and we're seeing an impact, too, at the airports. You know, yeah. TSA people not showing up and saying, you know, I'm going to take another job somewhere else or a part-time gig or whatever it is to make ends meet. So the longer it goes on, the more strain we're going to see in various parts of the government, various parts of the economy, and parts of our everyday life. So it will have an impact, obviously, the longer it goes. We don't have this type of experience. We've never been shut down this long. So this is kind of a new experience for everybody to see what that impact will be.
You probably, like me, have one screen on the markets, another screen on news. And when something happens on one side of that equation or the other, you all automatically see it. Yesterday was one of those days. Somebody at Treasury decided to tell somebody in the markets, maybe we'll back off on the tariffs. And we saw the Dow shoot up, the markets shoot up. What happened yesterday?
We're still trying to do the after analysis here. But in essence, that's it, was that somebody at Treasury had said and attributed to Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, that the U.S. was willing to back off of some of the tariffs in order to get China to the table and have some type of agreement. And for a while, for almost 10 minutes or so, we really couldn't figure out why the markets were taking off. Until that finally came out in the press. And it was walked back by somebody at Treasury. Actually, Steve Mnuchin walked back and said, no, that's not necessarily the case. And we saw the markets come right back again. But that gives you an indication that if we get a trade agreement of any kind, what that impact could be in the financial markets. And it's certainly going to be positive. So if we can get some type of a trade deal, we could see the markets 3 to 5% higher in fairly short order.
Vice President Pence was asked this week about that. He said that he didn't see much movement at all. He was disappointed with the talks that were going on.
Right. And, you know, there's certainly going to be, I think the end of this month, we should be seeing one of the Chinese ministers here in the United States to come to the table and have some talks. So there is some things going on, but a lot of what we're hearing or seeing or anecdotal evidence, there's not a lot of movement at this point. What we do know from a lot of the economic data is the impact on China is fairly large at this point. And China's bank has done a lot to try to get the economy going, and they are putting a lot of money into their economy to try to keep things going. So
it is having an impact on both sides of the ocean, and it's a matter of which country blinks first.
Paul, it was another decent week for the stock market. You've done a little bit of analysis on this. We're back to what, pre-Christmas Eve?
We're well up from Christmas Eve. Was the bottom. The selling there was if you compare the prior 2 weeks that culminated with Christmas Eve, it matched 2011 when they downgraded the United States from a AAA to a AA. It matched 2015, and in some cases actually matched or got very close to March of 2009, and all three of those were huge bottoms for the market. What we're interested in now that we've bounced and we're getting to some technical levels, and in the markets, you know, a lot of traders take a look at these certain levels, and it's 50-day and 200-day moving averages, and they're both around where the market is right now. And those also mark the bottoms that we saw early last year. So from a sentiment perspective, a lot of investors who bought the bottoms in 2018 are still underwater. And when the stocks get back up to those levels, a lot of those people will sell and say, okay, God, I made it back to break even. I'm taking my money off the table. So it puts a little bit of pressure on the stocks. If we can make it through this area right here, call it 2650 or so on the S&P, then we can maybe make it back to the old highs. But we'd like to see the market kind of back and fill a little bit and do a little bit of trading back and forth. These V bottoms where you get these huge downdrafts and then a big rush back into the market always make us a little bit nervous.
Is that the right move to make for some of those investors? I mean, if one of those investors is listening now, to cut and run like that when they get back to break even, is that a good place to be?
Well, you know, it depends on why you bought the company or why you bought the market or the ETF or whatever it is that you purchased. You know, what is your time frame? What are you hoping to achieve? And what we've done with some of our portfolios, and we did raise some cash in the fourth quarter, so we've started to put some of that back to work. We're waiting for the market maybe to come back down here a little bit, a couple percentage points or so, to put some additional money at work. We think that over the course of this year should be a good year for the markets, maybe 5 to 10% higher. And so we're taking a look at the general markets as not a bad place to be for the year and putting some money to work. Again, it depends on your time frame. You know, so some investors, are their time frame is a couple of weeks. Others are 3 to 5 years. And for those longer-term investors, just getting back to break even and then cutting and running without a significant change in the company's fundamentals or the economic fundamentals, I think is a mistake.
Let's talk a little bit about earnings season. You referenced this a little bit earlier. We're getting going and already out of the gate. The banks seem to be having some issues. You talked about some of the tariff concerns. What do we watch for as we move into earnings season's full swing?
Yeah, full swing will be probably in the next couple of weeks here as many of the companies report. And it's the earnings numbers for us is not as important as what the company has to say about current conditions, because a lot of what they're reporting now is fourth quarter of last year. And we're very interested in what they see going forward, some of the hurdles, some of the issues that they see. And we expect to hear a lot more about tariffs and how those are impacting companies. So it's going to impact McDonald's very differently than it's going to impact Caterpillar, different than Baxter. So we want to hear about some of those. We will also get a little bit of color from some of the companies on the government shutdown and what they see as their impacts. And then also some of the other challenges, just in general economic terms, what they look at going forward. Our expectation is, and this has historically been the case when companies do report, is they tend to tamp down some of those expectations going forward. Analysts are always bullish, so they always raise estimates, and a lot of the companies will try to tamp those down a little bit, bring those in so that then they can beat those estimates come next quarter. So, again, it's instructive to listen to the company and see what they're talking about their current conditions are.
Do I even ask you about Brexit after this week? I think I'm changing my vote to they're going to have another referendum and get out of it.
You know, I think what they're going to do is the way most politicians do it and do it well is kick the can down the road. Yeah. To be honest with you, with all of the stuff that went on this week with Brexit, we really didn't see it in the financial markets. We saw it actually in the pound. The pound actually rose versus the U.S. dollar, which, you know, again, if you're looking at it from the outside, doesn't make a lot of sense. But I think a lot of investors are like, you know, we've worried about this and wrung our hands for the last 2 years. Nothing's going to happen. They're going to kick this down the road a little bit, and we're going to talk some more, and nothing is going to happen, and that's okay by the financial markets. So I think Brexit is quickly moving to the back page of the financial papers.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with you there. Paul, great talking with you. How can people have this conversation one-on-one?
They can drop me a note, and we can get the conversation started at pnolte@kingsviewam.com.
You're going to have a snowy weekend this weekend.
Yeah, we've got the snow thrower all fired up and plenty of gas and lots of food and water and other things for the weekend.
So. Bread and milk, right?
Something along those lines.
Paul, have a great weekend. We'll see you again next Friday.
We'll talk to you then.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. And our regular Friday conversation with Paul is here. And then you can hear our podcast a little bit later this morning as well at WGNradio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. We're happy you're here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. The government shutdown impacting aviation and United Airlines trying to find new sources for revenue. Some of the things we can talk to Brian Summers about this morning. Brian joins us by phone this morning from Los Angeles. He's senior aviation business editor for Skift.com. And Brian, the government shutdown, there's more evidence this past week that the government shutdown is having a number of different effects on aviation. What do you know?
Yeah, Steve, in some ways it's getting better, actually, and in many ways it's getting worse. Where it's getting worse is with the TSA and security screening. You know, the last couple of weeks, the TSA said it had everything under control. It said it had a few more employees taking sick time than before. This week, they came out and said, you know what, we have a lot of screeners who are calling in and saying that they can't work today. They're being honest with us. They're not saying they're sick. They're saying that they can't afford to work for no pay in perpetuity. So that's caused longer lines at some airports. I don't think Chicago has been that bad. I know Atlanta has not been great. Most airlines say that they can cope. There are some reports of people missing their flights. But again, airlines say operationally they're okay. So that's one thing. The other thing is, I think last week, Steve, we talked about aircraft safety. And one good thing that happened in the last couple of days is that the FAA has recalled thousands of safety inspectors. Perhaps the FAA didn't realize that the shutdown was going to last this long. I think it's important for the whole nation's air traffic safety program that these inspectors come back to work. So that's another thing. A third thing is on the airline side. Delta and United reported earnings this week. The government is actually a pretty big client of most big U.S. airlines. And Delta said this month, January, they estimate they've lost $25 million in revenue because government people aren't traveling both on business and really they're not traveling on pleasure, right? Because they're not getting paid and so they're canceling vacations and things like that. United also reported this week. They declined to give a number, but United has a pretty big hub at Washington, D.C., Dulles, and so you have to imagine it is affecting United's bottom line as well.
Brian, back to the TSA. There's no sign that the shutdown is going to end anytime soon. Really, no progress at all is being made on this. How much longer can this continue? I mean, one would expect that the TSA problems would just get worse going forward. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I'm not an expert on politics, Steve, so it's hard for me to know when this is going to end. But you're right. I mean, if more and more TSA workers decide they don't want to come into work, the nation's air travel system could slow down, or I suppose at some point it could shut down, right, because people have to get through security. And, you know, there's folks out there, most of it is a joke, but it's on Twitter, and it comes around like this, and people are saying, look, the shutdown may end one day, not because of lots of big stuff going on in Washington, but because if people can't travel, folks are going to revolt. I mean, it may all come down to we have to open up the airports, and the only way that we can do that is open up the government, and maybe the government will reopen that way. Who knows?
Yeah, I've heard both of those, and I also heard somebody say that maybe the air traffic controllers ought to get in on this as well. Could either one of those organizations just walk out and stop this in its tracks? I mean, what are the rules where that is concerned?
You know, I don't know exactly what the rules are there, but you would imagine that if one of these groups walked off the job, whether it was legal or not, you know, government might get to work a little bit faster. I mean, one difference between, say, TSA screeners and air traffic controllers is that TSA screeners, I mean, it's a good job, but it doesn't pay all that well. People come and go from the job. With air traffic control, it is like a professional, well-paying profession. And so you would think that controllers are much less likely to walk off the job because this is a 30-year career for them.
Brian, I want to move on to another story involving United Airlines and Apple. There was this story that broke, I think of it last week or in the last week, where there was a banner. Somebody caught the view of a banner at an event, and it involved Apple being one of the biggest corporate clients at United. I don't think that's something that United necessarily wanted to slip out, but it did. What is this controversy all about?
Well, it's interesting, Steve. You're right. There was a banner in San Francisco that said exactly how much money Apple is worth to United every year. United estimated that the Apple corporate contract is worth about $150 million a year. Apple, of course, is based near San Francisco International Airport, which is a big United hub. United flies a lot of places to Asia from San Francisco, including Shanghai. So Apple is worth a ton of money to United. And my understanding is the reason that this banner was printed is because United wanted to let its employees know, like, hey, guys, Apple is worth a lot of money for us, and these people are going to be on your airplanes. And, of course, you should treat everyone well, but you really need to be treating the Apple employees well. And I think that the contract is up for renewal right now. You know, once the picture of this banner went public, United realized, hey, you know, we wanted to share this information with our employees, but we really didn't want it to go out there more broadly, and we never should have allowed the world to know exactly how much money Apple spends on us every year. Of course, it's not a surprise for most people, right? They're one of the biggest, most profitable companies in the world. They're based near United's hub, and of course, they spent a fortune on plane tickets.
Yeah, and there was, I think there some other clients as well were released on this. United says it's going to try to work to maybe keep this a little bit better secret. How are they going to do that?
Well, you know, there's a rule of thumb in our industry, Steve, right? I mean, when you have 80,000, 100,000 employees like a company like United does, once you share information with tens of thousands of employees, it's essentially like leaking it to the public. Once you tell that many people, nothing stays a secret for very long. So they're just, you know, they're not going to tell tens of thousands of employees who their best corporate customers are. They're going to tell the people who only need to know.
Brian, you have another cool story about United. United always looking for ways of increasing revenue, and it looks like they're going to look at premium seats, adding more premium seats to get more of those dollar signs.
Yeah, my understanding is that United is going to go with a special configuration on some of its Boeing 767. So right now, a lot of these airplanes have 30 seats in business class and 184 in economy. 30 is a good number, but there are certain markets, and I think that Chicago, London is one of them, where you can sell a whole lot of flatbed business class seats. There's just so much business traffic going back and forth. And especially in the winter, it's hard to sell coach because people aren't going on vacation to Europe in January. They're not going this week. And so United apparently is going to go with this new configuration of 46 seats in business class, 22 in premium economy, and only 99 in economy class. So basically half the plane is going to be taken up by premium seats. And you know, this seems like a good strategy in that premium demand is sky high right now, and United should be able to increase its margins in this way. Now, of course, Steve, if we get a recession next week or next year, United is going to have more trouble selling these seats, and the decision may look bad, but who knows what's going to happen in the future.
Are we talking millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of new revenue, or something less than that?
I would think it would be something less than that. This is what we would call a sub-fleet, so not even every one of United's Boeing 767s, but they haven't said how many. It won't be that many, and they'll just go to real good business markets. Again, London comes to mind.
All right. Brian, good conversation. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com. That's at Skift on Twitter and Skift.com. Make sure you sign up, too, for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report. You can find that on their website, skift.com/airline is the address. And follow Brian as well on Twitter at Brian Summers.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains a little bit later on Wall Street. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures up anywhere from a third to more than a half a percent. Now an update on agriculture and commodities. Let's bring in Orion Samuelson. Good morning, Orion. Happy Friday to you.
And happy Friday to you. And in the grain market, in the overnight trade, we're seeing higher prices, slightly higher, because of, again, optimism over the trade situation between China and the United States. But a couple of reminders this morning. First of all, today is the second day that the USDA has reopened about 980 Farm Service Agency offices, and they'll be open. They were open yesterday. They'll be open today, and they'll be open Tuesday. The other reminder is Monday is a market holiday, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Markets will be closed and USDA offices will be closed. But Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue said that 983 of the agency's 2,124 offices would be open. And he said at least one office will be open to each state, as well as in Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. And that is going to provide a little bit of relief, according to Todd Van Hoos, who is president and chief executive of the Farm Credit Council. He said, this is a time of heavy renewal for agricultural lending. We think it's very important that we get those offices open permanently so we can get new business done. But a reminder, market offices, Farm Service Agency offices, open today and again on Tuesday. But I would suggest that if you're going to go in to see them, you call or email or whatever. Get in touch with them to let them know you're coming and try to get an appointment set up. Because, Steve, this is an important situation for farmers right now because banks are renewing or not renewing the loans for the coming crop year, and so they need those numbers. Yeah.
Now, Orin, will these folks that are coming back in, will they be unpaid? Are they not going to be getting paid moving forward, or did the USDA find some money for them somewhere?
They're not being paid now as they work, but when the shutdown ends, they will be paid for the time that they've put in these 3 days. So. Okay. It's a little bit of relief for the workers as well. But sure. Can't stress enough, check ahead before you go to the county office in your county.
Has there been any movement of getting some of the data from USDA? Is that maybe the next step here where we get some more of these reports that have been on hold?
Yes, because we did not get a lot of critical reports, including final crop production figures for 2018. We did not get them on schedule a week ago today. We're still waiting for them, and that, too, will be part of what they'll have to discuss at the Farm Service Agency. And we do have some reports coming up. And, of course, the annual Agricultural Outlook Conference, which attracts a lot of people to Washington, scheduled for late February. And they're not sure they'll have the data necessary to really have a good session, but it's a two-day event. I've attended it many times, and a lot of other people in market activity and in crop production also attend that. So I'm hoping that we can get the numbers collected in time for that conference.
All right, we'll keep our fingers crossed. Orrin, what's on the morning show tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow morning, of course, we're going to talk markets, and we're going to talk about some of the winners in corn production for last year. Some phenomenal numbers coming in from farmers in an annual contest, so we'll talk about that, and I'm still trying to get in touch with Max to give us a report on the American Farm Bureau Convention, which ended on Wednesday of this week.
All right. Orrin, we'll be listening. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. The Morning Show with Orrin Samuelson tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, January 18th. Industrial production for December leads off today's economic reports. Analysts see a bump of 0.3% on top of 0.6% gain in November. The preliminary January Consumer Sentiment Index is due at midday. Economists expect a noticeable pullback from the final December reading. Earnings today from Schlumberger and SunTrust Banks leading off the quarterly earnings reports. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, January the 18th.